America Empowerment Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit VoiceAmerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis, with your host, Suzanne Z. Pedro. This program will catapult your awareness in the mastery of power, influence, and persuasion. Journey to the uncharted conversations of human interactions and discover your winning capital. Now, from the boardroom to the bedroom with Suzanne Z. Pedro.
Hi, this is Suzanne Z. Pedro, and this hour will empower you through a different, unique perspective, through historical context. Throughout history, there have been brave and strong women who had to overcome many obstacles that go back to, let's say, pioneer days that people want to try to do on survival skills and different things that primitive man and modern man collide. So these stories we're going to hear today are inspirational and empower all of us in our lives. But how can we learn from these women in the women in the past? And that's where my guest comes in, Professor Carl Berkin. She's a professor and historian who has written multiple books on women in early American Revolutionary history. And just to give you an idea, the titles are really long, so the abbreviated version is like Revolutionary Mothers and Civil War Wives. That's just a couple to name. And she's also been a contributor to PBS and the History Channel for TV documentaries on early American Revolutionary history. So, but what we're most excited about, Professor Berkin has penned this new wonderful novel about Elizabeth Betsy Patterson Bonaparte. When you hear Bonaparte, you think of Napoleon right away. But she was the wife of Jerome Bonaparte, Napoleon Bonaparte's youngest brother. Professor Berkin has been described as a history advocate and is a pioneer in the field of women's history. So join me, sit back as we travel back in a time to learn some of the earliest secrets that women used to empower. So I welcome my guest, Professor Carol Berkin. Hi, Professor.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Oh, thank you. So your new book, that's what we really want to focus on. But other than that, I mean, I definitely strongly recommend anybody that has this interest. Once you read one, you're going to want to read them all. So, could you give I know it's kind of long, but in a little nutshell, what Betsy was, what the story synopsis is?
Well, this is the story of it's actually not a novel, it's a historical reconstruction of the life of a young, beautiful, and very, very bright and very determined girl from Baltimore who fell madly in love the way teenagers do at 17 with a handsome naval officer from France who just happened to be the youngest brother of Napoleon Bonaparte. And she insisted on marrying him despite everyone's opposition. Her father's, the French consul, everyone said this is going to be a disaster, and she said, no, I'm going to marry him. And of course it was a disaster. They were married, and when Napoleon found out about it, Napoleon liked to marry his relatives off to nobility and royalty in Europe. He was furious, and he annulled the marriage. He got the French government to annul the marriage. He tried to get the Pope to annul the marriage, but the Pope said no. And Jerome, who really was a rather spoiled, materialistic, and weak-willed young man, took his brother's offer that he'd make him very wealthy and a member of the royalty, some royalty somewhere, if he'd abandon Betsy, and he did that. He left her pregnant, about to have a child. Napoleon banned her from entering Europe. She went to England and had her only son, and she should have gone home. This is 1806, when women had almost no rights at all, and she should have gone home, her tail between her legs, and married some local fellow so she'd be respectable, and that would have been all we ever heard of from her. But she was an amazing, amazing woman. She said, absolutely not. I'm going to be independent for the rest of my life. And she was.
And it's amazing because I'm not going to give away the whole story, but she was able to finagle Bonaparte into giving her a pension. Is that not correct?
Yes, and she invested. Yeah. She's such an unusual American woman because in the early 19th century, women were supposed to be confined to the parlor, that is the home, and the nursery. And she gets a pension, and she manages her money so brilliantly that she dies a millionaire. I mean, this is a phenomenal event. And as soon as Napoleon is exiled, she goes off to Europe, and because she is beautiful and brilliant, she becomes, in effect, the belle of Europe. Men fall in love with her. The most fun I had was reading the dreadful love letters and terrible poems that were written to her by all of these men. And well into her 80s, she lives to be 94, and well into her 80s, she's getting love letters from men. It should only happen to all of us. And she travels all alone, which is unheard of for an American woman. She travels all alone without any chaperone, all over Europe. She is invited to the most intellectual gatherings in France. She's in England, they fall all over her, and she travels to Europe several times in her lifetime and is really everything an American woman was expected not to be, and lived a completely independent life. I'm a great admirer of hers for that reason, although the toll on her of bucking against the customs of the time turned her in many ways into a very bitter and very controlling woman. So she has her bad side too. A lot of people who've read the book say to me, oh, she was horrible, I hated her. And I think, you know, that's the high price of going out there all on your own when everybody disapproves of what you're doing. So I found the story just amazing. And all I could ever think was, if she were just alive today, all of this would be normal.
Absolutely.
And she wouldn't have had to swim upstream at every turn.
You have one of her quotes in the book, and she said that she would rather be governed by my own rules than any rules by another man.
Yes.
And like you said, I mean, today, you know, if you're a strong woman in corporate America, you're seen as hard, cold, and as the B word. So,
yes. But at least you can do it. At least there are other women doing it. When Betsy did what she did, really, there was virtually no one willing to strike out on their own, no woman to strike out on her own. So she must have been, well, I know she was, because she says she was, extremely proud of what she'd done, but also very lonely, I think. She did not have she had an exciting life, but she didn't have a happy life.
Well, what do you think it was about her, you know, where most women, you said that era would do that with the baby, leave the baby. Didn't she leave the baby?
Yes, she left her child with her her sister-in-law. I mean, that was not uncommon when people traveled, but she left her son and went off to Europe because that had been her dream. It's hard to know, you know, when you can't interview people when they're dead, exactly why they do things. But I think a lot of it came from seeing her mother be such a passive, submissive woman. Her father was very wealthy, but did not take his marriage vows very seriously. And actually, when her mother was dying, he brings one of his mistresses into the house. And I think Betsy was revulsed by what could happen to a woman who didn't stand up for herself. And she frequently refers to how horrible her father was and how passive her mother was. And I think that's one of the things that shaped her desire to be independent.
But didn't she also, when she was younger, she did at one point live that flamboyant lifestyle that...
Yes, she was 17. She falls in love as a teenager, and she really thinks he's going to carry her off away from America. She hated American society. She thought it was barbaric. She thought it was bourgeois, and she thought that men so dominated women that it was there was no place you could be an intelligent woman. And she thought Jerome was going to carry her off to Europe and she'd live this fairy tale life. So she was, you know, she was a naive kid. But later, she decides she'll create that life for herself. And it is true that she rather enjoyed, when she was young, shocking people. She appeared in public in the French fashions of the day, which was no long sleeves, no high neck, no tight corset on, no petticoats. She appeared in those outfits that are sort of pseudo-Grecian, that clung to your body and were low-cut. And people were shocked by her. And my favorite quote was a woman who wrote, "You could see her boobies." They were, she behaved like that because she was 18 at the time.
Yeah.
When she gets older, what I think is really remarkable about her is I could find absolutely no record that she ever had an affair with any of the men who courted her. She remained absolutely genteel throughout her entire rest of her life. So she made up in thoroughly for her youthful discretions by being really a bit of a Puritan when it came to sex and men.
Well, we have 1 minute before break, but do you think, 30 seconds now, let me quickly ask you, do you think that was just a young love affair, or was he truly Jerome, you know, maybe the love of the life and, you know?
Oh, no, he was not the love. This was a teenage fantasy. She couldn't see the real Jerome, who was the little spoiled brat. And later in life, she always admired Napoleon for being bold and brave and taking what he wanted. She referred to him. She referred to her ex-husband as a weasel.
Okay, I just needed to clarify that. Well, we're getting ready to go to break. When we come back from break, I'd love for you to tell my guests the effort and what it takes into, gathering the research and the material to put this fabulous, you know, book together, you know, historically, and the way you write it, it weaves, you know, I mean, it just lulls you when you want to keep turning the page. So we'll be right back with Dr. Carol Burke, and thank you.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
Are you a business innovator, or are you just sitting on the sidelines? Tune in every week for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP. Host Bonnie D. Graham talks to a cross-section of the movers and shakers who are leading by example. They will share best practices and innovative ideas to keep you thinking and moving along with the best. Join us for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP, Wednesday mornings at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Have you ever noticed that sometimes life just feels easier, especially when judgment of you or anyone else ceases to exist? What if you could function from that space all the time? What if gratitude is the key? Every time you are grateful for someone or something, a new universe opens up. What difference can you create in your life and the world from the energy, space, and consciousness of gratitude? Join us on Access Consciousness presents Beyond Saying Thank You every Tuesday at 12 noon Pacific Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Have you friended us on Facebook yet?
Why not?
Just go to Facebook.com/Voice America or search for the keywords Voice America. Once you are part of our Facebook network, you'll receive daily messages about what's happening with our shows, this week's featured guests, and new happenings at the Voice America Talk Radio Network. And you can add your voice to the always active discussions on our wall. Just go to Facebook.com/Voice America or search for Voice America.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
This is From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis with Suzanne Z. Pedro. To reach the show today, give us a call at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You can also send us an email anytime to protocolpraxis@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
We're back with Carol Berkin, Professor Carol Berkin, author of Wondrous Beauty, The Life and Adventures of Elizabeth Patterson Bonaparte. And before we get into the research process, I need to ask you, how do you choose the subject of your book? I mean,
someone actually found her for me. It was almost a gift. I did a lot of documentaries for a company called Middlemarch, and the researcher for them, when you finish a book, you always say, oh, I can't think of anything else to write about. And he called me up and he said, you must write this book about Betsy Bonaparte. And I said, who was she? And he sent me some of her letters. And as soon as I saw them, I realized he was absolutely right that I wanted to write her story. And so this one was a gift from a friend, in a sense. She had been a very good friend of Dolly Madison's, and he had just done this documentary on Dolly Madison. That's why he knew about her. Surprisingly, almost no one really had heard about her until my book came out. People were just amazed that this very interesting woman existed. So I'm really glad that I agreed to take up the challenge of writing about her.
Well, you know, next time I go down, I'm in New Orleans, and we have the famous Napoleon House.
Right.
And I'm going to have to go see if Napoleon left any mementos from Betsy down there. I mean, it's amazing because, like you said, I mean, she was almost obscure in history then.
And right. She's one of the, we always call them lost ladies, and part of what women's historians love to do is recover these amazing women that have been ignored because they weren't president or general or a political figure or a robber baron, and point out that their stories are often much more interesting and tell you more about the times in which they lived than the story of I don't know, William Henry Harrison or some other president.
Oh, yeah. So you've given this wonderful person, this wonderful character, not living person, in history to write about. How did you go about doing the research from there?
Well, I tracked down where her letters were. and they happened to be, I really was quite lucky. Her letters were all in the Maryland Historical Society. Boxes and boxes and boxes. She lived to be 94, so there were just boxes and boxes. So I picked myself up and went down to Baltimore and sat in the archives for quite a while and read all of these letters. And then I did what we sort of call a spider web. I made a list of all the people she wrote to, and then I checked their letters to see what they said to a third party about Betsy, because sometimes that's very revealing. And then I read all the background material to know, understand Baltimore and to understand Napoleon and Napoleon's family and what he did with the family and to understand her family and what happened with her father. So you, in order to really write one biography of one person, you have to begin to understand scores of people around her and the place where she lived and where she went. I remember doing a lot of research on the French salons that women ran in France, that Madame de Staël and Madame Racumière and others ran, because Betsy was invited to those. And then I began to do some research on the male artists and poets who fell in love with her. And so you really, a lot more goes into it than what you see on the pages of the book. Otherwise, it would be 3,000 pages long. So there's a lot of context that I did research for, so I could really understand what made Betsy unusual and what was ordinary about her. I studied fashion so that I could see the difference between the dresses the matrons of Washington, D.C. were wearing and the dresses that she was wearing, where they called her a half-naked woman. There was, and a lot of it is just fun. I mean, it's just wonderful to go back in time and get to know a city 200 years ago. So I had a wonderful time doing the research on this book.
So basically, Professor, you were doing a psychological, genealogical, and historical autopsy.
That, right. Very well put. Oh, I wish I'd had that line when I did other interviews. You're right. That's exactly what you do. And then, of course, you have to try to write it in an engaging way, and I wanted it to read like a novel. That is, I want it to read like a story about someone, which is really what it was. And so it takes, you have to have a little bit of the novelist in you to write a compelling biography. So I was very happy when you said that you really liked the book.
Oh my goodness! It kind of reminded me the style and the story. I know it's historical, but it was still, you weaved it into a storytelling, like Les Dangerous Liaisons.
Yes. If only they would make a movie of this book, which is what I really hope they would do, because
would be
it's got
fabulous.
Everything in it, you know. It's got Napoleon and Europe and beautiful people and terrible love letters.
And the costume design and set itself would be just like out
yes.
of this world.
I mean,
Have you thought about pitching it? Or?
Well, you have to, yes, but you have to know, you can't just go knocking on Steven Spielberg's door. You have to really know that world and know who to contact and know, and I really don't, you know, academics just, so someone would have to read the book and say, wow, I could make a great movie out of that. I don't have the connections to get them to do it. But if you know anybody, please be sure to send my book.
I sure will. And some of your other works, I mean, it was a Revolutionary Mothers, Women in Struggle for Americans' Independence, Civil War Wives, Brilliant Solution. I mean, all of this what people would pick up and think, oh, this is just historical content. I don't see where they see that there, that old saying, history repeats itself. So,
no, they are great stories. I discovered in Revolutionary Mothers, I discovered all these young women who had been spies for General Washington, who had carried messages long distances from one army to, you know, branch of the army to another. And all these women who burned their crops so the British government couldn't get it. The British army couldn't get it. Just amazing. A black slave woman who rescued her master from the British. I mean, there's so many amazing, amazing stories about what women did in the American Revolution that you read an ordinary history book and it's all about men. You
right.
would never know there were any women in America in the midst of this home front war. And so I have and in Civil War Wives, these were three biographies of wives of very famous men. Ulysses S. Grant's wife, Julia, and Angelina Grimke, who was the wife of a very famous abolitionist. And my favorite character, Verena Howell Davis, who is Jefferson Davis's wife. And I tell the story of the Civil War through the eyes of these three women. And it looks really different than it looks through the eyes of their husbands. You know, it's so history can be, I don't want to just make a pitch for my books, but history can be really, really fascinating. I've never understood why people thought it was boring. It's just filled with stories of interesting people. And for me in particular, powerful, independent thinking, determined women, which is what I like to write about.
Well, I mean, we've seen where women had to go to war, and like you show in the Revolutionary Mothers, you know, during World War II, many of the women have never worked previously. They were, you know, what was it, Rosie the Riveter?
Right.
And the workforce. And now, here we are, fast forward, and a new age, and with all the mass turmoil and everything going on in the world around us, and the concept of however you want to term it, terrorism. What do you think about the modern woman today? Does the act them differently?
I think that, I don't know if you ever read Alice in Wonderland's Through the Looking Glass.
Oh,
and
yes,
she's
ma'am.
She's on the chessboard, and the white knight says to her, you have to run twice as fast just to stay in the same place. And I think what's happened with modern women is every time we take real strides forward, there's an effort to drive us back, and you have to remobilize and run twice as fast in order to not only get ahead, but to preserve where you've gotten with your triumphs before. And so I think that we're going through a period now, this is just my opinion, we're going through a period now of real efforts to push women back, to take away a lot of the things that make it possible for women to have careers and have jobs. I don't think they're going to win. That is, I think women are going to win in the long run.
We have to go to a little break in like 2 seconds, and we'll be back because there's just so many more questions that, well, I have you. I'd love to get all the information I can from me and my guests.
Sure.
So we'll be back with Professor Birkin. Thank you.
Build your better business. Achieve that goal. Make good on that resolution. The Voice America Empowerment Channel. It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed.
What sets apart VoiceAmerica.tv from the other video content providers on the Internet? Choice and flexibility means that you can host your video content live or on demand on the main VoiceAmerica.tv channels through your own branded media player or your own private TV channel. We support multiple media formats, so all of your video content can be in one place. We offer a number of advertising and video packages. For more information, visit VoiceAmerica.tv. If you think you've seen online TV like this before, let us surprise you.
Do you feel like sometimes you just don't know where to start with your health and fitness routine? Every week, you can hear from people who have been where you feel that you are right now and find out how they moved forward and are living their best lives ever. It's called Lifestyle 360, and your host is Nicole Monier. Get inspired to take control of your health and your life. Tune into Lifestyle 360 every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Are you ready to move to your next level? Listen for Empowering Women, Transforming Lives with host Rebecca Hall-Greider. Each show will focus on a central topic with discussion, guests, and your questions being featured. Our show is perfect for women who feel a call in their heart to step out in a bigger, more powerful way in their life and just need some encouragement, inspiration, and practical steps to support them on their journey. Empowering Women, Transforming Lives can be heard live every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on Voice America Empowerment.
Build a better business. Achieve that goal. Make good on that resolution. The Voice America Empowerment Channel. It's your world. Motivate. Change. Succeed.
This is From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis with Suzanne Z. Pedro. To reach the show today, give us a call at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You can also send us an email anytime to protocolpraxis at gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
I'm back with Professor Carol Bergen, author of Wondrous Beauty, The Life and Adventures of Elizabeth Patterson Bonaparte. And we were talking about contextually, you know, historically rather, what women went through back then and as modern day women. And had we really advanced, is there really such a thing as war on women, or are we the mothers out there and the workers out there making the financial decisions, the you know, checkbook, the financial, the house, picking the houses? So what is your take, Professor Bergen?
Well, certainly there are women. I used to have a bumper sticker that said a woman's place is in the House and the Senate and the White House. So I think that there's no question that there are. My daughter, for instance, has her own banking account, checking account. She keeps her own salary. She's married. I don't think that women are, at least middle and upper class women, are not so dependent on their husbands. You don't see the circumstances where they have no idea how much money the family has or what to do, where it's invested. I think women are much savvier today, and that leads to, I think, a greater chance for independence. And certainly there are women running corporations, and there are women in government, and there are women who are entrepreneurs. And I mean, things have really changed since Betsy Bonaparte's day. There's no question. Women running colleges, women graduating in greater number from colleges. So I think you would have to be blind not to see the incredible progress that's been made. But, you know, there are people who fight back against it, and you have to do battle with them. And everything hasn't been won. And I think that the next generation will have to have their own agenda for what they want to fight for, what they want to...
I think that's what makes Betsy so unique is that she knew what she wanted, you know, and she set out to get it. It wasn't necessarily the love and the romance, but she knew how to get that pension from Bonaparte.
Yes.
Then invest it, take a little bit, and not, I heard, instead of buying those French clothes for herself,
She invested it. Yeah.
Yeah, and then but she would still go.
She followed her money like a hawk. She knew exchange values. She knew when to move her money out of certain things and into other things. She put her money in real estate. In Baltimore, she owned a great number of buildings and homes in Baltimore when she came home to finally live there. She really was as shrewd as her own father had been, who went from rags to riches. Betsy really knew the value of keeping up with her own money. Her daughter-in-law, of course, turned everything over to her husband like a good woman and had not a clue about their finances. Betsy was not going to do that, and I think modern-day young women probably are more like Betsy than like her daughter-in-law.
You know, with Betsy, too, she had good innate knowledge about psychology, human psychology. Like, she didn't, when you wrote that, she did not... She'd invest the money, and instead of buying fancy stuff, she would ask what her friend Dolly would like from France or Paris, and bring it back to her and make it an endearing gift.
Yes.
So, I mean, I thought that was very fascinating that she knew. She was very persuasive.
Yes, she was. The other great sign of her independence was she wanted to make her son eligible for succession to the throne, the emperor's throne in Paris, in France, when Napoleon III came to power, who had no children. And when the royal family said no, Betsy took him to court. I mean, she was really quite fearless. She took the entire Bonaparte family. She said, I demand that, and she hired the best lawyer in France, and she sent him. She had kept her marriage certificate. She had kept all the evidence that her son was legitimate. She had had witnesses at the birth to say that this was the child of Jerome Bonaparte, and they took it to court, and they lost, and she appealed. I mean, she was, you had to really beat her down before she would quit fighting, and it was sort of unheard of for a woman to do something like this. So she was very much like the feminist of the 1970s and 80s who said, you know, we don't care what you say we're not supposed to do. We're going to do it. And she did it all by herself. She didn't have a movement to back her up. She didn't have friends who supported what she did. I just think she's a very amazing person from the 19th century.
And the more you read about her, I mean, when she finally got the war over with the Bonapartes, and then she comes back, and the Union is divided up, and she was so opposed to this vile, you know, rebellion, and she kept on saying that, you know, the politics here, you know.
Yes, she thought American politics were insane. And this is when she made her biggest money. She invested in U.S. government bonds. She knew that, she figured that the Union was going to win, and she took a lot of her money out of other areas, and she did really very, very well. she understood politics, she understood economics, she understood finance. It helped that she really was an extraordinarily bright woman. I'm not sure all of us are that smart, but she set her mind to things that mattered to her well-being. And you know, when she dies, she refuses to be buried in the family cemetery, and she says, "I have lived alone, I will die alone."
And then the other thing she said was, "Once I had everything but money, and now I have nothing but money."
Nothing but money, yes.
So that's kind of a sad reflection, those two
quotes. Yes, it is. I mean, you have to... We can't turn her into a superhero who had all this success and also great happiness. And, you know, in the movie, some handsome man will come along and whisk you away at the very end. She gave up a lot. She gave up marriage. She gave up really a lot of what we would call today happiness to stand on her own. And that comment about, "Once I had everything but money, now I only have money," is sad. I mean, she understood the cost of what she was doing. And you have to admire her for that too, I think. She was not naive about what she was going to be giving up.
Do you think it had something to do with the relationship with the father?
Oh, absolutely. I think the most important man, in her life was her father. She always wanted to win his approval, and she never did. And he always wanted to win her respect, and he never did. And they were locked in this very, very intense relationship for their entire lives. And a sad, sad relationship, because it was never resolved. I think he was the most important person, and she, of course, hated him with a passion.
And the way he treated her mother, as she was subservient, she did not want to be like her mother.
Exactly. Yeah. And yet, really, the emotional intensity between the two of them in their letters, it burns in the paper. He writes attacking her, "You should come home, you're embarrassing the family, you're doing things you shouldn't do, why don't you grow up, why don't you behave responsibly?" And she writes back and says, "I am having a wonderful life, and I would never come back to live in your house." And yet they missed each other. I mean, you can tell that they... At one of the very last letters he writes to her, she says, "I'm coming home." And he says, "I was so glad to get your letter. I so look forward to hearing from you." And when I read that, I thought, oh my God, really? They're attached to each other.
Love-hate, one of those complex...
Yes. And I think modern-day women can relate to, if not with their father and if not that intense, I think they can relate to the difficulty of building their own lives in a way that is different from their parents, and how much tension that can often produce for, much more so, I think, for young women than for young men, who are expected to go off on their own and do amazing things. But women are supposed to cling closely to the traditions of the family.
Well, we're getting ready to go to break with Professor Carol Birkin, and when we be back, we'll hear some more enchanting stories. Thank you.
Success starts here. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com. It's your world.
Like so many others, do you put on a game face to the world? The stress of home life, work life, and personal life converge on us on practically a daily basis. Yet, so rarely do we let others see our real selves. And we carry on like we don't have a single problem. We need to connect and to find out we're not alone. Tune into Stories from the Heart of Leadership with host Shamin Sadek to find out not only what's been created, but the story behind it. Listen live every Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific, on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Master your reality and manifest your desires effortlessly. Listen to The Trivedi Effect to find out how raising your level of consciousness can totally transform every aspect of your life. Hosted by Mahendra Kumar Trivedi with Trivedi Master Alice Branton, our program will spotlight the nearly 4,000 documented scientific studies that have proven the transformational impact of this energy extends beyond humans to all living and even non-living matter. Tune in Mondays at 1 p.m. Pacific on the Voice America Empowerment Channel or Saturdays at 9 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Seventh Wave Channel.
Become a member of VoiceAmerica.com. It's easy and best of all, it's free. Start out by going to our homepage or any of our channels and click Register at the top. Once you've created an account and signed in, you can create your own custom library, opt into our newsletter, search by show, host, guest, or topic of interest, or browse millions of hours of content across all of our Voice America radio channels. Membership gets you more. Visit VoiceAmerica.com today to get started and tailor the listening experience to your taste.
Follow us on Twitter for more great ideas at Voice America Empowerment.
This is From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis with Suzanne Z. Pedro. To reach the show today, give us a call at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You can also send us an email anytime to protocolpraxis@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Hi, we're back with Professor Carol Bergen, author of many, many books of great historical context of wondrous beauty, the life and adventures of Elizabeth Patterson Bonaparte. But we're fortunate enough for her to give us a sneak peek into our new book that's coming out in, I think you said, May 2015.
Right.
And it's a brilliant solution, inventing the American Constitution.
No, that one's already come out. That came out in 2001. This is sort of the sequel to that. That one was about how we got the Constitution, and this one is about how we got the Bill of Rights.
Oh, a book on the Bill of Rights, okay, by Simon and Schuster, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, now that you can tell us about that, because this is a totally different male, female, different writing, different gender.
I go back and forth. I was trained as a early Republic. The early Republic, the Revolution, and the early Republic historian, and I still maintain a lot of interest in the politics of the day. And I learned some interesting things. I learned that even many very educated people think the Bill of Rights was part of the original Constitution. They don't even realize that it was added on in the 1790s. And the other great myth that Americans have is that from the minute it was written and ratified, it became the most important part of the Constitution. And the truth is, as soon as it got passed, everybody just completely ignored it until after the Civil War. It's the 14th Amendment that gives the power to the federal government to enforce the protections of the Bill of Rights. And even then, it really does not begin to enter our legal system in any serious way until the 1930s. So there's a long gap before it becomes such an important part of our daily political culture. And this really surprised me as well. So discovering how it got passed and how it got
sort of ignored then for decades and decades and decades, was, I thought, really a sort of amazing story for us to understand today. And the simple explanation is that the states controlled all those issues, all the issues of freedom of speech and freedom of the press and the issues of judicial process, and they were all controlled by the states until the 14th Amendment. And so even if the federal government saw something that it thought shouldn't be done, it didn't have any power to enforce the Bill of Rights really much later.
So that was pretty much under the 10th Amendment, the power to the states?
Yes. Well, the 10th Amendment simply acknowledged what everybody already knew, which is that the states were much more powerful than the federal government until much, much, much later on. In the 1790s, when you asked someone what country they were from, they said Maryland, Connecticut, Virginia. They really thought of their state as their country. It took a long time before people would say the United States. And in fact, they never called it the United States until after the War of 1812. They called it these United States.
Wow.
Meaning, you know, the states had agreed to create this government, but when I wrote the book on the Civil War, I grew up in Alabama, and I I had to say, not that the South was right about slavery, but Jefferson Davis was absolutely right that the states existed before the federal government, and that, as far as he was concerned, the states had a right to leave that government. And that was how they thought in the 1790s, that the states really were the sovereign powers. And men like Hamilton and Madison and George Washington, who were trying to build a nation, had to fight against this this localism, I guess you would call it. They were not sure they were going to win. Today we just assume there's a strong central government, but if you read their letters, they don't think that they're going to win that battle.
I can't imagine that the process and the for you to did you able to go and actually hand. I mean, these letters are so historical. You were able to read these.
You can go in and read the letters of which of course those of us who write about this do. All of Jefferson's letters you read, they've preserved them very, and you can read the congressional debates. I read every word of the debates in the House of Representatives when Madison put forward the Bill of Rights. And here's the part that will probably really surprise you. Everybody in Congress said, "Don't be silly, we don't need that. Let's get on with important stuff." They said, "We have to organize the judiciary. We have to decide what the tariffs are going to be on European goods. Don't bother us with this, Mr. Madison." And he had to really persist to force them to talk about what today we think is, you know, the most important set of rights that any people in the world have. So it's really a surprising story to discover how things that we revere actually came to be. And how glad we are that they came to be, I would add.
And we have like 2 minutes left, and I want to get you to be able to give you a website and where they can purchase books and everything. But one quick question real fast. When you did your research, textualism versus contextualism, did you go strictly by what the reading what was written, or did you do any interpretation of what the author's intent was?
Well, not so much about their intent, but you had to analyze the consequences and the motivations for what they were saying. For instance, there many books have been written about James Madison, about why he proposed the Bill of Rights. Some people say it was because he wanted to keep his reputation in Virginia, which was strongly states' rights. Other people say he did it because Jefferson told. And I go through all of these interpretations. I can't say, I'm not in Madison's head. I can't say exactly why he did it. But his letters indicate certain things. He writes letters and he says, I think it's important for our society that we have these touchstones, these statements about what people in America are entitled to. And he really thought that was important. Even if they couldn't be enforced, he thought it would be a credo, something to aim for, something to strive for.
Well, Professor Carol Birkin, thank you for being with us, but could you give everybody how they can contact you and any kind of pertinent information about your book?
They can go on Amazon.com and get all of my books. They're listed on Amazon.com. They're listed on Barnes & Noble website. And they can contact me at carol.birkin@Baruch, B-A-R-U-C-H, .cuny, C-U-N-Y, .edu. That's the branch of the City University of New York where I taught for 40 years.
What a pleasure. And if anybody is scared to pick it up thinking you're going to get dry historical content, you're very wrong. It will keep you enthralled, and it's just amazing, and it can absolutely empower you if you could see what this young lady did. Well, thank you, Professor. I sure enjoyed it. Thank y'all.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in this week. Your host, Suzanne Z. Pedro, will be back again next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for another edition of From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis. We hope you'll join us as well.